This is The State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Frank Stacio. Imagine a world where it's possible to turn on your car using only your brain, where a monkey in Durham can control a robot in Japan. It sounds a bit like science fiction, but it's happening right here, right now. Miguel Nicolelis is a professor of neuroscience at Duke University and founder of Duke's Center for Neuroengineering. His work with monkeys could have monumental implications for other primates, us. He joins us now in the studio. Miguel Nicolelis, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much for the invitation.
The basis of your research is translating the neuron activity, the language of the brain, to the digital language of machines. How did you figure that out?
Well, yeah, that basically started when we acquired the capability of recording these brainstorms. They're just electrical storms that crisscross the brain, coding all the behaviors that we create. And when that technology was developed about 14, 15 years ago, we actually got a chance to read and listen to these brainstorms in real time. And then, since they're electrical signals, translate them into digital commands that any machine could understand. That was the beginning.
And so, that means that these electrical storms that our brain produces for each individual movement and span of movement and et cetera, produces a certain kind of signal that we can read.
Right. Yeah. Any behavior. It doesn't need to be a motor behavior. Every time we look at a TV, we smell something, we taste a piece of food, or we remember, you know, something that happened in the past or plan something for the future, our brain, the billions of neurons that exist in our brain, are creating these behaviors out of electrical signals.
So it's fascinating enough just that we're able to read that. The translating of that into machine speak, into digital speak, you've shown this with monkeys. Can you explain this experiment?
Yeah, we started in rodents first, but then quickly moved to monkeys because we realized that we could train these animals to do a variety of motor behaviors. They're very interesting, very similar to our motor behaviors. And what these monkeys do, they play certain video games. And as they're planning the movements that they have to perform using their hands, their arms, or even their legs to play these games, we read the brain activity that is produced a half a second before the movement starts. And during that time window, half a second, we translate these signals to digital commands, and we send them to machines that now become the way in which the animal can perform the behavior to receive a reward every time it plays the video game. So the machines actually become an extension of the animal's body, and they use that as an interface to play these video games.
And what you're seeing, and you can see this in a video on your website, the monkey is not moving.
Yeah.
The monkey's just sitting there, and there's something attached to the monkey's brain.
Yeah.
And then there's a virtual arm on the screen that's moving.
Yeah, we started with robotic devices, robotic arms, robotic legs, and recently we realized that we actually can have a virtual body that these animals can learn to control in virtual space or in anywhere. And it's exactly what you said. The animal imagines the movements. The movements are translated to digital commands. They make this virtual device move in a particular space. And the animal soon realizes it doesn't need to move its own body anymore. It can achieve the goal just by imagining the movements.
And then there are different objects on the screen. And when the virtual hand touches these different objects, it's actually sending different tactile senses back to the monkey. Right?
Yeah, that was the latest development on this research that first, we could move things. We could move arms, legs, virtual bodies. But there was something very important missing because when we make these motor behaviors ourselves, we need to feel how these behaviors are coming out. We need to touch something. We need to feel the ground as we step, you know, on the ground. We need to touch an object to feel it. So in this experiment, the animal sees three objects that are visually identical. They simply cannot make any distinction just looking at them. But as this virtual hand controlled by the animal's brain touches each one of these objects, they receive directly into the brain an electrical message that is proportional to the texture, the microtexture of these objects that you can only feel if you put a hand on top of it. And they learn in this bidirectional dialogue brain, virtual arm brain, how to identify the correct texture that is associated with a reward, and that is a drop of juice.
It's just fascinating. I want to also ask you about another experiment in which the thoughts of monkeys in Durham are controlling a robot in Japan.
Yeah, that was done a couple of years ago, and now we're expanding on that to prove that when you free the brain from the physical limits of the body, and that's what these brain-machine interfaces can do, we are trying to test the limits of to where we could take this technology, how far could we take. And the farthest we could think about it was to control an object on the other side of the planet. And that's exactly what happened. A monkey walking a treadmill here at Duke in Durham, send brain activity related to the stepping movements that the monkey had to do to Kyoto in Japan in real time. Mm-hmm. And in Kyoto, a humanoid robot, CB1, was able to walk autonomously under the control of the brain of the monkey here in the United States. And more than that, as the monkey controlled the movements of this robot, there were video images streamed back to the United States from Kyoto, projected in front of the monkey, showing how the legs of this robot were moving. Mm. And actually, when we stopped the treadmill, the monkey was able to keep that robot walking without walking itself. Mm. So it was basically just imagining the movements and being certain that the movements were being produced because it could see the legs of the robot walking in Japan.
So how can this technology help people who are paralyzed, which I know is the next step you're looking at?
Yeah, that is one of the main potential clinical applications of this technology. We are trying to develop what we call a neuroprosthetic device, a device that could restore mobility to patients that suffer from severe degrees of body paralysis. And the idea is that even if you have a lesion, for instance, of the spinal cord, and let's assume that you cannot walk anymore, you know, you have a lesion that paralyzes your legs, your brain is still producing the motor brainstorms needed to control your legs. But these signals cannot reach your muscles because this nerve highway that we call spinal cord has been lesioned, so the messages cannot go through. You know, the nerves have been cut or severed. The idea is to bypass that lesion, is to basically sample, record these electrical brainstorms the way we did with monkeys and send them to a robotic vest that we call an exoskeleton. It's a wearable robot, a robot that a person will wear and that can actually understand the language of the brain in digital form and make this patient recover or resume mobility under the control of his or her own brain activity.
How far away is something like this?
Not as far as people may think. Mm. We are getting very close now. And we are actually building an international consortium with universities in Europe, in Germany, Switzerland, here at Duke, and in an institute in Brazil. We are actually building this exoskeleton, and we are doing the first experiments in monkeys to see if we can get a monkey to actually control a whole body robotic vest.
And I understand that you're hoping to try out the robotic vest, the bodysuit, at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil.
Yeah, that's one of the proposals we have of this consortium that is called Walk Again Project, is to make a demonstration of this exoskeleton at the opening game of the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup in Brazil. You know, Brazil is known as the land of soccer. But what we thought about is the possibility that the opening kick of the World Cup would be a major goal for science to show that there is a tremendous potential in the next decades to provide technology for millions of patients worldwide that need this kind of rehabilitation too.
Well, this is just incredibly fascinating and promising stuff, and I want to thank you very much for coming and telling us about it. Miguel Nicolelis is a professor of neuroscience at Duke University. He's founder of Duke Center for Neuroengineering. You can learn more about his work at nicoleliselab.net, and Nicolelis is spelled N-I-C-O-L-E-L-I-S. Miguel Nicolelis, thank you so much for being with us
today. Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.